We're starting a new Sunday school class, and we've wrapped up some of our other series, and this one is on gentle and lowly. If you have not, make sure you pick up a book at the back. We have several of them. We got 100 of them given to us by the publisher, so we have more than enough. If you take two or three or whatever, that's okay. If you want to give those out to friends or neighbors or coworkers, whatever, even better. So take one, pass it around, something like that, right? 99 books on the table. Take one down, pass it around. All right. So like I said, we're gonna go through the book, but if you read it, great. If you don't, fine. It's not like a requirement. You're not gonna be missing something, so there's videos that pertain to the book. The author actually sits down and he'll kind of talk through some of the material over those chapters. And so even if you miss reading that section, that's okay. He'll summarize it there. Obviously, if you read, you'll get a little bit more out, but you know, don't feel like, well, if I'm not reading the book, I guess I can't be a part of the class. It's not that way at all. It's okay. So I just encourage you to get that book. Just by way of introduction, why we're doing this is to get at the heart of Christ, of who Jesus is. A few years ago, when we first got to India, they were like really obsessed with personality tests. You guys know anything about personality tests? So at the time, this was like 2012, 13, they were really into Myers-Briggs, and they were like, okay, passing around the Myers-Briggs test, and I am an INTJ, and I am an IEFNT, and all that, you know. And then they're like, okay, we're gonna like put you in this box, and you know, all of that. And then over the last couple of years, then it was like, you know, the four different types of personalities, like phlegmatic, and what are some of the other ones? Melancholy, sanguine, and choleric, right? And so putting them in those boxes. And then recently, it's been the Enneagram, right? The Enneagram 3, that's right, bump my fist. Yeah, Enneagram 8, Enneagram 9, whatever. So some of you are like, what in the heck are you guys, what are you even talking about? But for those of you who understand personality tests, it's like, wow, now I understand not only who I am, but the person I'm talking to, and I can understand them, and I can understand them at a deeper level. I know how to talk with them. And so is this going to be, this study, like a personality test? In some ways. In some ways, it's like, okay, let's get, what is the personality of Jesus? If we were to put him into a box, like those personality tests are, what box would he be in? Is he, you know, a choleric? Is he this or is he that? In fact, at one point, we're like, when we were studying these tests, like, he's all of them, because he's Jesus, right? He's like, he covers all of them, which in a sense, yes. But what is at the heart of Jesus? What is the personality of who he is? What makes him tick? What drives him? What's at the very core? What's his motivations? That's what we want to look at. And so you might be thinking, you know, why are we doing this study now? Well, because we got 100 free books from the publisher, and so it's like, we have to get rid of them, right? No, that's not really what it is. It's not because we got the books, therefore we have to do a study. It's obviously convenient, but that's not the reason why. Last few teachings that we've had in Sunday school, right? We've had series on conscience. We've had series on the story and being a blessing to our community. We've had just recently on family discipleship. And then even on during our teaching on in the Sunday service, during the sermons, have been the book of Acts and love your neighbor as yourself and 1 Corinthians. So some very deep topics that can really challenge us. That really spurs us, especially with me. I keep saying, man, I keep stepping on your toes. I keep poking. I keep prodding you. That's kind of in my nature. But I do that. We've been pushing you. We've been challenging you, say, over the last 12 months or so, 12 to 18 months. And so now we just kind of, let's take a deep breath. Let's take a pause out of all those really challenging, deep topics and just say, okay, all right, let's get a breath of fresh air. Let's actually dive into who Christ is. Not necessarily what he wants from us, not necessarily what he desires from his people, but actually who he is. Because sometimes we need that break. We might be weary of all of the teaching. And so we need to get back to the foundation of what motivates not only Christ, but then what motivates us as well. So what's the goals, what's the objectives of a study of gentle and lowly? Well, it's so that you remember to run to Christ, to run to him. And that should be the natural inclination of your heart is like, man, I just want to run to him. I want to go to him because I know what his heart is. I know what motivates him. I heard a story from a new cross-cultural worker that I was interviewing with our mission board. And her story was that, you know, growing up, she viewed Jesus as a transactional relationship. Like, okay, I do this, and then you do this for me, and I do this for you, and you do this for me. And it's this transactional relationship. And what changed her life was realizing that she can actually have a personal relationship with Christ. Like, he actually wants to be with her, and she wanting to be with him and not just a give and take. And so that's kind of like what I want for us is not just especially after these challenging teaching series that, okay, well, I have to do this for him and he'll do this for me. That there is part of that, but mostly this is a personal relationship, and I think we need to get back to those roots and that foundation. And so a goal is to run to him, to give experience, to give words to your experience, to go beyond just an intellectual knowledge of who Jesus is, but really a heart understanding of who he is, that what really drives you to him. So to that end, I'm not going to be the one that solely teaches this. It'll be a tag team from the elders and myself. And we'll play a video. We will have a larger group discussion, and then we'll break up into smaller groups and kind of get into some applicational things based upon what we heard and based upon the teaching. Now, how can we live differently? So, Caleb, if you're ready, we can play this video. This is the author of the book, kind of summarizing the teachings from those chapters.
If we were to ask one another, what are the most startlingly wonderful words ever uttered by human lips? I think it would be hard to improve on what Jesus says in Matthew 11, where he says, "I am gentle and lowly in heart." The whole passage reads like this: "Come to me, all who labor and are heavy laden, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gentle and lowly in heart, and you will find rest for your souls. For my yoke is easy and my burden is light." Those words, "I am gentle and lowly in heart," are really worth a lifetime of pondering. Just think of what each word there means. Jesus says, This is his own claim. This is not what his disciples are saying about him. This is not what a personality test spat out. This is his own claim, his own words. He says, "I am." He doesn't say, "I was," at one time, but now his heart has cooled off. He doesn't say, "I might one day be or will be once you get your act together." He says, "I am." In fact, Thomas Goodwin's burden in his book, The Heart of Christ, which is very much embedded within this project, Gentle and Lowly, his burden was to convince his readers that just because Jesus is way up high now in heaven doesn't mean that he is any more distant from us now here on earth. In fact, by his Holy Spirit, he is closer to us than Christ was to his disciples. We'll return in future videos to think about who the Holy Spirit is and how that is true. But Jesus says, "I am gentle and lowly in heart." This is not a past reality, but a present reality. This is who he is. It's not who he one day might be. This is who he is. "I am," and then he says, "gentle." Who of us would ever have guessed that he would use that word as the first word out of his mouth to describe his heart? What a wondrous adjective to use. "I am gentle." Jesus is saying, "I am the most tender, non-manipulative, non-abrasive person you could ever come across. He says, I am gentle and lowly, to drive it home even more. These are overlapping ideas, but distinct. I am lowly in heart. In other words, I am the most accessible, the most approachable person in the universe. You don't have to go through security to get to me. You don't have to take a ticket and get in line. You're not going to be put on hold. I am the most accessible person in the universe, glorious as he is, the Revelation 1 Christ, the Christ who is ineffable and magnificent, resplendent, divine. That Christ says, I am gentle and lowly. And he says, in heart. This is not something peripheral to him. This is what his own heart is. In other words, this is what you could say gets him out of bed in the morning. This is the deepest, innermost core to who he is. This is what pours out of him, his heart. The heart in the Bible is not just emotions or what you are feeling in a frothy kind of way. It's not less than our emotions. But the heart is the innermost core of why we do what we do. And when Jesus comes and tells us what his heart is, he says he is gentle and lowly in heart. This is who he is. Now, you might object and say, Dane, you're cherry picking. This is one verse, one short little passage out of everything that we have in the Gospels. And that would be a valid objection if everything else that we saw in the Gospels was Jesus walking around like an aloof seminary professor dispensing wisdom dispassionately, or a celebrity preacher, you know, whisked off to the green room, untouchable, or a politician that you have to go through many layers of security to get through, or something like that. But of course, what we see of Jesus on every page of Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John is exactly what is taught from his own lips in Matthew 11. Matthew 11, 28 through 30 is just the tip of the iceberg. What we see him teach in Matthew 11 is what we see Christ do all over the four Gospels. So he is so clearly drawn irresistibly to sin and suffering, to pain and anguish, to guilt and shame. This is what his heart is drawn to. It's what he opens himself up to, which is the exact opposite of how we operate, of course. We see sin. We see someone suffering. Our natural instinct is really to be put off by that, repelled by that, to flee from that. Christ is the photo negative of that. He's the exact opposite. His heart is drawn into sin and suffering when he sees it. As we launch through this video series, remember, bear in mind, be astonished at, with me, that he is gentle and lowly in heart. We are the cold, cool, calculating ones, not he, though we naturally think of him in that way. All it requires to experience the embrace of Jesus Christ is to collapse into his arms. And anyone can do that.
So I hope you all get a picture of what he is talking about. This is again from Matthew chapter 11. And he says, where the famous words, come to me, all you are weary and heavy laden, I will give you rest. My yoke is easy and my burden is light. Because I am gentle and lowly in heart. So that's where he gets that from. And so I want to talk about that a little bit, kind of unpack a little bit of what he is saying in that video and in these chapters. You know, he says that, did I cherry pick that verse? Did I just say, okay, this is one verse, and because that is the only verse that we have, the only testimony in the Gospels or even the whole Bible that says, what is the heart of God? What is him self-description of himself, of what his heart is? The only one right there, and it is, I am gentle and lowly. So is that, can we build a whole theology based upon that, right? Can we do that? And my question is, How do Jesus' actions throughout the four Gospels manifest his heart for sinners? To whom does he naturally gravitate towards? Is that up on the board? Yeah. So whom does he naturally... So just think about that in the, your readings. I know that most of you have read through the four Gospels, or at least are familiar, at least have gone through Sunday school classes as kids and things like that. So what in the Gospels do you think does it prove Jesus' own words, "I am gentle and lowly in heart"? Does that manifest itself in the rest of the stories in the Gospels? What do you guys think? What examples can you show of that?
Well, look, I would say the woman at the well. Mm-hmm. He could have, he being a Jew, he being a man, he being a teacher, could have written her off and disregarded her, but he engaged her and made her feel not only welcome but useful.
Yeah. So the valuable. The woman at the well, so if you guys are familiar with that one, so he comes to the well and gets a drink, and he is a Jew, a teacher, a rabbi, and some, it's a Samaritan woman that comes to the well, and so they're different ethnicities, and then also a woman, and so just those different time periods should have been repulsed by that, should have stayed aloof from that, and then not to mention her five husbands. So she's very obviously what we would call a fornicator, one full of sin, we would say. And then he's not saying, "Oh, I better stay away from that woman because I don't want to be put in a bad light. I don't want to get infected by her. I don't want to be her to rub off on me." But he draws near to her and draws her into a conversation and pours out his heart. "I am the living water." Yeah. What else? Kevin.
I think the gentleness in how he approached the adulterous woman.
Yeah. In John 8. Yeah. So the one who was being stoned, he comes up to her and basically delivers her from that, right? And says, condemns the Pharisees' actions, and then lifts her up and sends her on her way. Yeah, very gentle to her. Who else?
Zacchaeus.
Yeah? Right, so I want to go to your house. A very well-known, we would say, sinner. I want to actually go to your house. So invite me to your house. Don't just, okay, you once you clean yourself up, then you can come into my house. No, I'm going to go to your house and spend time with you. What else? Yeah, Harold.
Let the little children come to me.
Let the little children come to me. Right. What else?
Along with Zacchaeus, I think of even his calling of Matthew. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Sinners, and Jesus was criticized for that. He basically says, "I have not come to call righteous, but sinners to repentance."
Right, right. So calling of Matthew and going to his house, the friend of tax collectors and sinners, and him being condemned for that, and him just response, "I didn't come to the clean. I came to the dirty. I came to the sinners."
His weeping with Mary after Lazarus passed.
Yep, weeping with those. Right. So he actually, there's two times in the Gospels where he cries, where he shows him weeping. One is Lazarus. And do you know the other one? Huh? Yeah, Jerusalem. Where he actually weeps over Jerusalem. So there's two scenarios where it's not necessarily about himself, but it's about other people. Like, I'm weeping over what's happening to other people. And so he's drawing near to them. Yeah, Chuck. There's a few other instances where, remember when the leper who comes to Jesus and he says, if you are willing, you can make me clean. And what is Jesus' response? I'm willing. Willing is, it goes to the heart of the emotions, right? I'm not just willing, but I desire to do that. I want to do that. It's my wish to do so. Yeah, Justin. Right.
Am I missing something?
Yeah, no, you're right. It has that idea of that yoke, the one of oxen to go and travel. He mentions in the book, he talks about that, and I forgot what he uses an illustration for that, but it's one in which it's not like a heavy burden, like he places a heavy burden on us, but it's one, he uses one where we say something in our natural language where it's like, take this upon you, but it's actually really easy to do. If we it's actually better than the yoke we were having before. So, does anybody else who read that, does anybody remember? It's slipping my mind now.
I remember, but I can't remember.
Yeah, you're in the same boat as me. Yeah, right, I remember, but I don't remember. Yeah. Yeah.
And so, like, it totally took the pressure off the young oxen, but it taught the young oxen, like, how to walk with the big oxen.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
And for me, like, that was such a good picture of, like, oh, wow, like, he totally wants us, you know, to take the load, to take the pressure off, but to learn and to walk with
him. Yeah, right.
And training side by side.
Yeah. Yeah, so that picture of training of the younger oxen. Yeah, Whitney. Yeah. So yeah, you can look on page 23 for that answer. Yeah, the life jacket. That's the one I was thinking of. Yeah, so it's like you're telling to a drowning man, like I'm about drowning, and then you throw the life preserver at him, and he's like, well, I can't take on this heavy yoke of a life jacket. No, take this off. No, it's like it's actually going to save your life by taking on. It is like you're putting something on you, but it's actually a life-saving burden to put on you. So that I think, yeah, that was a great illustration. I couldn't think of that. Thanks, Jen, for pointing that out. So yeah, that's the idea of yoke. So now my next question is, and you can flip the slide, Caleb, is, what are some of the ways in which the New Testament depicts the lowly and gentle? Those two words, lowly and gentle. What does that teach us about Jesus? So he mentions a little bit about what those words mean. But, you know, gentle having this idea, like there's a few other times in which the Greek New Testament word gentle is used in the New Testament. And one is the meek in the Beatitudes, where the meek, blessed are the meek, for they shall inherit the earth. So that's that same Greek word, gentle and meek. And then the other time it is translated is in the triumphal entry, where they are talking about the prophecy from Zechariah that a king is coming to you humble and mounted on a donkey. So again, the same word is translated there as humble. And so so we have gentle, it being translated as gentle, as meek, as humble. And so just pondering the words of that is Jesus saying, that's my heart, is one of where I'm meek, I'm gentle, I'm not one to condemn, I'm not one to just, when you're coming to me, I'm not going to be like, you're too much for me, I can't handle this. No, he is gentle with the person who's coming to him. And then the word lowly, again, that word is translated in James. Remember where he says, God opposes the proud, but gives grace to the humble. All right, so now we're opposing two different things. And then, also it's translated in Mary's song, where it says that he looked upon me in my humble estate. So, so now we're not just talking about a virtue, where, okay, well, his virtue is humility, but we're talking about his actual state of being, if you will. Like his life is one of just of a lowly estate, a humble estate, one of not very, like where Mary was, of a humble estate. Paul's instruction in Romans, it's the same word in Paul's instruction in Romans chapter 12, where he says not to be haughty, but associate with the lowly. So again, it's their way of life almost in a sense. And so it's this word lowly has the connotation of being socially unimpressive. As Ortlund says in the book, it's the one who causes the host to cringe when they show up for a party. Right, so here's this person who's coming, and the host is like, oh, I don't want you to come into the party. Like, that's who Jesus, he's that person. He says, I am that guy who comes, and he's like, he makes the host cringe. He's not the life of the party. He's not the king. He's there in the lowly estate. And he mentions in the video that means he's accessible, right? And you can think about the times in the gospel where he is accessible to the lowly, to those who come to him. So my suggestion to you is to embrace this, what it seems like, right, that we have two extremes of Jesus. We have the high, lifted up, majestic, kingly person that we see in the book of Revelation with the tongue of fire, and it's like we see him and it's like, I got to back away from this holy person. But then there's this other extreme of him being gentle, humble, meek, accessible. And you're thinking, how do I match these two things together? And I'm saying, don't match them together. Hold them in tension. Say, yes, he is high and lifted up. Yes, he is majestic, but then at the same time, he is lowly. Don't try to say, well, I've got to be able to try to, like, you know, maneuver these things. No, hold them. Hold them both. I think that's the challenge that we have before us. So what I want us to do now is to spend some time, lengthy time, because we can see we have about 20 minutes left. So usually, you guys know me, I give you like 5 minutes in small groups, but I'm trying very, very hard not to do that for this session, because I think this is where the meat of our study through this is, our small group applicational teaching is. Okay, so break up into smaller groups. Again, what usually happens is we have like this like large small group of like 10, 15 people. No, keep it to 5 or 6. Keep it to max maybe 7 or 8. Keep the groups small so there can be more interaction. Or because sometimes if it's larger, then people are like, oh, I don't want to talk up. But if it's smaller, everybody has to talk. So that's what I like. Sorry for you introverted people. I'm making you talk. So it's great. So the small group questions are, how is his natural impulse towards sin and suffering different from our natural, typical instinct? And how can we learn from his example? Now, we're talking about whether that is our own or whether it's others, right? So how is his impulse towards our own sin and suffering, or what's his impulse to others, right? So what is that, and how can we learn from his example? And then the next one is, what misconceptions of Jesus, that's not grammatically correct. I don't know what I'm saying here. What misconception is Jesus correcting? No, it is. Sorry. What is he correcting when he describes himself as gentle and lowly? How do you find yourself falling prey to that misconception in your own thinking? So the question here is examine whether you're creating a God in your own image. Are you presenting a picture of Jesus that's not actually what he describes himself? Is it a Jesus of what you want? Or is it one of what he actually is? Because it's like what I talked about, the guy who is socially unimpressive, the one who cringes at the host of a party. Well, I don't want to follow that guy. I want to follow the guy who's kingly, the one who's like so massively impressive. Do I really want to follow that guy? Well, are you creating a God in your own image, right? So what are the misconceptions that we have, and how does that manifest in our own thinking? How does that manifest maybe in our own lives, how we think of Jesus? When we are just stuck in suffering and sin, we just need to get our act together. What is that? How is that manifesting in our thinking? So break up into small groups, and then obviously, this should be without said, pray at the end. Pray for one another. Pray that the Lord would draw your heart and your understanding to who he is. So pray for one another in your group. So break up into that. You guys have, like I said, about 20 minutes or so.